Northern Ireland is the most prosperous devolved region in the UK. That's the case according to a report from an international think tank called the Legatum Institute. It says Northern Ireland has strong well-being and social capital. The Economy Minister, Simon Hamilton, tweeted, "It was great news, but exactly why?" 030 30 80 55 55 on the phones. Giles Dillnott from the Legatum Institute is on the line. Good morning, Giles.
Morning, Minnie.
Set this out for us. Why? How should we be interpreting this report?
All right. So at the Legatum Institute, we're very focused on this concept of prosperity. Now, most of your listeners will think prosperity, that means money, right?
Yes.
It does, but it doesn't as well. We believe it means as much about well-being as it does about wealth. And what we've done with our UK Prosperity Index is take a look at, yes, how much money is awash in the system. So we look at the economic quality of an area. That will be unemployment, long-term unemployment, child poverty, job satisfaction, all sorts of figures that the government use. These are not figures we've collected. These are ONS figures, government figures, NHS figures, police figures, that sort of thing. So we do measure how much money is in the system, but we look at the business environment, how good it is to run a business, how easy it is to set one up in a place. We look at education outcomes. We look at health outcomes. We look at how safe or secure a place might be. We look at the social capital, and you just mentioned that, and I'll go into that in a moment, and the natural environment. And we're using all these figures to come up with a ranking in all those separate seven pillars, we call them, and then you get an overall prosperity ranking. And it is true that Northern Ireland comes out as the most prosperous devolved nation in the UK.
So that makes me think that we're all rich. That's what this report is saying. We've all got plenty of money. Finances are not an issue, but clearly that's not the case.
It's not saying that. Here's the interesting thing. Rural areas are generally poorer than cities. It just so happens that rural areas are better at turning that into prosperity. Now, what pulls you up? Well, for example, super fast broadband, things like that. That's really good for your business environment scores, so you do well there. Social capital, if you go to the area of social capital, this is how strong your neighbours look after you, how much connection there is between you that isn't organised by government. Now, look at Northern Ireland in the area of social capital. It's second. Mid-Ulster, it is fifth, Antrim and Newton Abbey. It is seventh, Belfast. You know, you've got three areas in the top 10 for social capital out of 389 local areas.
And this comes back to us being a divided community. So social capital is good because we're happy being separate. Is that right?
No, and that's the very important thing. Why is social capital so high? Because you're very, very bonded, but within those traditional communities. And that's where you're the exception. If you're looking at social capital across the UK, there is no great divide there. Yeah. It's just a question of whether you look after your neighbour or not.
Surely that's what I've just said in terms of we're happy being separate. So we have our nationalists, we have our unionist community, and we seem to be happy because we are divided. The report does reference very briefly the likes of peace walls, etc. And we rely on people in our own communities. And do we not reach out, whether that's loyalist or nationalist?
This is where you are the slight exception within our measurements of social capital. So within those communities, the bonds are very, very strong. Yes, but obviously you've still got those divides. Now, when you're talking about somewhere like Burnley, for example, it's got the highest percentage of people who say happily that they could call on someone in an emergency, that they know that there would be someone there for them. In Northern Ireland, that social capital, yes, it's there, but it only exists within those separates. Whether you're happy being like that, well, that's a different question.
So if we go back into the report, you've alluded to this already. Northern Ireland has the highest level of trust in the UK.
Yes.
Exactly how does that work? If we feel like we can trust within our communities, but not beyond, we perhaps wouldn't go, if you're from nationalist to loyalist, we depend on people that are very close to us.
It's more than that, Vinny. It's also just explaining why it is that there will be levels of trust. So again, yes, of course, there will be distrust in certain areas, particularly across traditional divides. But within those communities, those levels of trust are extremely high. And that obviously is something to do with those bonds of social, but it's not the same thing. Social capital is about what you will do for other people and how much you will step out for other people, but the trust thing is a particular measurement of how much you trust those neighbours, how much you deal with them, and how much you believe that they are giving back to you.
Are you surprised by anything that you've uncovered in this report, Giles?
There are all sorts of anomalies. One of the biggest ones is cities, and I'm sure that's the same thing going for Belfast as it is for your areas around that, much more rural. The cities of the UK, very, very good at generating wealth. A lot of wealth comes to them. Sometimes that's from government. Sometimes they generate it themselves. They are not very good at generating prosperity for the people who live in those cities. Yes, some of them will be winners, absolutely. But across the board, they are actually statistically less good at distributing that prosperity than rural areas. That was a surprise to us.
Okay, Giles, thank you very much. That was Giles Dilnot from the Legatum Institute. Also with us, Mike Nesbitt, the leader of the UUP. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Vinny.
And also Nicola Mallon from the SDLP and the DUP's Carla Lockhart. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Mike, first of all, with yourself, so Simon Hamilton has tweeted that this is great news. What is your take on it?
Well, Vinny, I'm going to take my figures from the executive and from their budget document of 2016-17. And, you know, in terms of economic prosperity, it is very clear that there is a huge gap. And this is on page 7 of the document, paragraph 2.9. They make clear that the gap, in simple terms, is like this. If a person in Great Britain, in England, Scotland or Wales, has a pound in their back pocket, the people in Northern Ireland have about 76p. And that gap has got wider over the last 9.5 years of DUP Sinn Féin rule in our government. And as for well-being, I see Simon Hamilton is tweeting that we have strong well-being. I mean, that's an outrage. Simon knows as well as every other MLA that in Northern Ireland, on a per-head basis, our mental health and well-being is probably as bad as anywhere on planet Earth. And as for social capital, this is an indictment. This report is an indictment that says the executive is utterly failing in its ambition to create a shared future, because it says the reliance is on our immediate community, be it loyalist or nationalist. It says in the report, and I'm quoting here, Vinny, social capital is strong, but it only reinforces the sense of solidarity within and divisions between our two traditional communities. So this report is a damning indictment of our government. And if the government, the executive, thought we were doing well, the question is, why are they revolutionizing the way they do government? Why are we switching to an outcome-based accountability system of government? If we were doing so swimmingly, we would just do more of the same.
Okay. Stay there for a second, Mike. Carla, given what the minister tweeted, he said this was great news, and what you've just heard from Mike Nesbitt, what are your thoughts?
Morning, Vinny. Well, I would start by welcoming the report. I think the report...
Even after what you've heard Mike say?
Well, we have the prophet of doom once again on the radio this morning. I like to talk Northern Ireland up. I like to ensure that people know that this is a great place to live, work and do business. And it's a place I'm very, very proud to be a part of and proud to represent. I think the document itself gives us maybe a new talking point. It does talk about prosperity, and it actually talks about looking at a wider base. Sometimes we do look at hardcore figures, whereas this actually goes below that and actually says, well, look, there are a number of variables that affect these figures. So the likes of, they don't just measure what average household incomes are, but also the feelings about them, the percentage of people who say they can live comfortably on that income. So it's actually drilling down into it. And look, we have to be honest, we've made huge strides forward economically. Employment rates are at their highest. Economic activity is at an historic low and falling. The Northern Ireland is matching the UK GDP. We're far from where we want to
be. Well, we're hearing two very different interpretations of this. Mike, you're the prophet of doom.
Well, if Carla thinks we should be talking things up, she can stick her head in the sand if she wants. I would direct her to page 13 of the budget report from her executive, which says economic inactivity remains stubbornly high at around 27%. And I would invite her to come with me. We'll go somewhere like the emergency department of the Ulster Hospital, and she can listen to the nurses and the registrars and the consultants who are talking about this explosion of people presenting with poor mental health and well-being issues. And then she can say that our social capital is strong and that our well-being is not an issue.
Mike, there's... Something from the executive office, it says that an official assessment of the programme for government, which shows that 85% of the 82 commitments were achieved and a number of others partially achieved. Many will interpret that as to be some level of success.
Well, there is some level of success, Vinnie, but I think a percentage assessment is pretty shallow. And now the two points I would make.
85%.
First of all, I mean, one of the commitments, for example, is to give every child the opportunity to have a preschool place. Now, you can tick that box because, for example, families in Newton Ards that I know of were offered places at preschool establishments in West Belfast, 3 or 4 hours a day. Now, by the time you drive up, leave your child off and get home, it's time to turn around and go back to collect. So practically, it's no good, but it ticks the box in terms of that 85%. But look at where the failures are, Vinnie. They are the big ticket issues. Dealing with the past, failed to deliver. Goods, facilities and service legislation to ensure older people are not discriminated against. They were promised that legislation. They were not delivered that legislation. It should be a rollover into the next programme for government, which should be out, by the way. But in the Department of the Executive's development plan for the next 5 years, there's no mention of legislation for goods, facilities and services.
Mike,
one last point, okay, which is very important, because nobody's talking about this. The Executive have failed on their promise to deliver 5,000 high-end jobs at the Old Maze prison site with a £300 million investment. And that
what
is not happening because King Marty cannot use the royal prerogative to make it happen because he can't.
Mike, a simple question. I'm going to put this to all of you. Do you believe, in your interpretation, you've lived here many, many years, but do you think that Northern Ireland is a good place to live?
Yes, I do. I do, but I don't think we should deny the problems. And you go out onto the streets, Vinnie. One of the biggest issues we have is the poor mental health and well-being of a significant section of our population. And that means they woke up this Monday morning denied the sense of purpose that you woke up with, that I woke up with, that the other politicians you're going to speak to today woke up with, through no fault of their own. We all accept it's a problem. We all accept there are things we can do to intervene. Why are we not doing it?
Nicola Mallon from the SDLP, would you suggest, would you recommend Northern Ireland as a place to live? Is it a nice place to live? Is it somewhere where we can prosper?
Well, certainly, I'm very proud of Northern Ireland, and we have come a long way, but let's not get carried away. We need a dose of reality here, and we still have a lot more to do. I have to say that fundamentally I agree with the underlying principle of this report, that a country's prosperity is much greater than simply measuring its overall wealth. It's about your health and well-being. It's about your life expectancy, your educational attainment. And fundamentally, it's about having a society where everybody has the opportunity to realise their potential. But the truth of this report is that nowhere in Northern Ireland are we ranked in the top 100. Belfast, which is our key city, our key economic driver, is ranked 313th of 389 local authorities. And Derry and Strabane, 367th. It comes out of 389. So we need to take stock and we need to recognise, as Giles himself admitted, that there is an exception when it comes to Northern Ireland. For the authors of this report, social capital is the key metric for prosperity, and that means local bonds, your cultural identity. And he admitted himself that in Northern Ireland, and in their report, that segmented society, that fragmented society, is very much an obstacle to creating greater prosperity than it is an enabler. So we have to be honest. We have to look. We do have the highest rates of mental health. We do have high rates of suicide. Yes, we are doing a bit better when it comes to employment. But you look at the housing waiting list, you know, 40,000 people waiting on a home. We see that, 68% of our students who study in Great Britain don't return for employment. So we've got to ask ourselves, if we are the most prosperous devolved region, then why are young people leaving our shores and not choosing to come back?
Carla, we are hearing quite a negative response from other parties here. Did Simon Hamilton, this tweet of great news, is this masking over something else?
Well, I think, you know, you have to take note that you have two opposition members on the radio, and of course they're going to snipe from the sidelines. We, in the last election, received an overwhelming mandate to go in and to try and fix some of these problems. I'm not saying Northern Ireland's perfect, but I'm saying we have a great base to start on. We have made massive strides. Mike talks about the 5,000 jobs that the Mays, but he doesn't happen to talk about the 50,000 that were created in the last mandate. Jobs that some of our young people are able to obtain and get and work and contribute here in Northern Ireland. I recognise there are problems. I would be crazy to come onto the radio and say that Northern Ireland is doing everything right. It would be absolutely crazy for me to do that. But what I'm saying is we're in the executive. We're part of a team that actually wants to move Northern Ireland forward, not just do it down on...
Well, speaking, Carla, off the executive, we did ask Sinn Féin to come on and they have not responded to us. Is this another case, as Stephen would call it, shinned up, where the DUP will not come on, or the Sinn Féin will not come on to discuss something with the DUP, your partners in government, on air?
Well, that's up to them to decide whether or not they put someone up on the radio. I'm on the radio on behalf of the DUP. I'm part of a very strong team.
Of course, but this has happened quite a few times, and obviously there is a certain element of this question for Sinn Féin, but there is a bit of a pattern emerging when we're discussing issues like this. When we bid for both parties, one will not come on, generally Sinn Féin.
Well, look, as I said, it's very much up to them. The DUP is very focused on delivering improvements for the people and their lives in Northern Ireland. This report, whilst I recognise, it uses different variables, it's a talking point. It's not our report. It's a very interesting read, and I would encourage people to actually sit down and read it, because you can learn from it, because it does throw up things like, Mid-Ulster is ranking higher than even my own constituency in health terms. And yet we do have a world-class acute hospital on our doorstep. So it does actually make you think, well, look, are we doing things right? And are there better ways of doing things? So, I look at this as another way and another report that helps us to look wider.
I want to hear what you think at home this morning. Do you think that Northern Ireland is a good place to live? Would you recommend it to your friends that live elsewhere? Do you feel like we can be prosperous? And is there an issue with us staying very much within our own community? 0-30-30-80-55-55. Nigel, good morning.
Hi, Benny. Surely the report just tells us what we know already. We are happily divided. We have built and continue to build a divided society.
Does it not sound like a slight contradiction, happily divided? Are we not meant to live together? Does it feel strange when you say that out loud, Nigel?
Well, it does to me, because I want to live in a mixed area. I'm middle class. I can make financial decisions to do that. So I can move to the area I'd move to, which is mixed. I have three kids. Two have left and won't come back. The third is now wavering. He might come back. He may not. He might stay. He might go. The middle one in particular just left because he just hated all division and everything else. Yeah, that's the problem. But people who vote for the DUP and Sinn Féin are actually happy with the society we're building. I'm not personally, but they are. We live in a democracy. That's the shape of our society. You have a choice of voting DUP or UUP. They both believe in a divided society, basically a nicer or a stronger version, as does Sinn Féin and SDLP. We don't have parties who want to build a shared country. We want to build our own little spaces.
Mike, your response
to that? That's not Mike's fault. That's Northern Ireland.
No, but let's let Mike respond. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear it, but I have to take that on board. That is a perception, but that's not what I'm about, Vinny. I would like to see a truly shared society. I remember as a very young man, my father putting me in the car, driving me up the Craigantlet Hills. This would have been in the very early 1970s, and we sat in the car and we watched Belfast burning. As the majority population in one street burned out the minority population, whether that was Catholics burning out Protestants or Protestants burning out Catholics. And I think we had the biggest migration of people in the city of Belfast that have been seen in Western Europe since the Second World War. And we have yet to address that division and put people back together again in mixed education, in mixed housing. We kind of get it in mixed employment, because we put legal pressures on business people to make sure they have mixed environments in the workplace. But we have such a way to go. And I do want to have a genuinely shared society measured in sport, in housing, in employment, and in recreation.
Carly, your thoughts on what you've heard this morning? Do you think can we move beyond the divided society? We're being accused... You're being accused of... being happy with us living in our separate communities. You've got the loyalist community, the nationalist community, and for some reason, and this report is highlighting, we simply can't live together.
Well, like, I think the report does note that, you know, we are still a divided society. I think we have came a long way. I am 31. I am someone who has embraced change. I recognise that there is a way to go and that a lot of sharing will happen through very natural things like education, like health, like jobs, like through sports, through arts, through music. I recognise that that happens, and it does take a period of time. But I actually think one of our big benefits in Northern Ireland is how we are structured and how we do have that real community feel.
So it's a benefit, the benefit that we're divided.
Well, I look, you know, it talks in the report as well about a rural-urban divide. And like, I'm from a rural community. And the sense of community in that rural area that I live in, you know, you don't ask what religion you are. You just get on and you do the work. And if someone needs help, the other person's there to help you. You know, so it's trying to nurture that rural and maybe transport that into more of our urban areas where there are still.
But Carla, some listening to this will assess what you've said as you're admitting that this report suggests, we are living in a divided society. And then they will link that through to Simon Hamilton and the fact he tweeted that this was great. Is it something that we're trying to change, that Stormont is trying to actively move away from?
Well, I think, you know, it's very clear that the DUP are in the executive to make a difference in Northern Ireland. They want to move Northern Ireland forward.
Yes, but what does that actually mean, though, Carla?
Yeah, we want to create jobs. We want to make it a great place to live, work and do business. We want to make it a safe place. We want to have the best healthcare system within the UK, across the world. You know, there are lots of things that we want to do. But we've got to realise, you know, we do have to work within our means, and we will strive over the next 5 years to deliver for the people, as we have done in the last mandate. And we have very clear outcomes that we have achieved. But yes, there's a lot of work still to do.
Michael's online. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Vinny.
Go ahead.
And listeners, the big strategic problem Northern Ireland has is we do not have a shared historical narrative. We have about five different versions of history, and through that comes a sense of what justice and what truth is. And if we can't refine a shared historical narrative for the next generation coming up, those massive issues of justice and truth, which we can't even deal with, are going to remain and be more complicated. But the giraffe under the stairwell is this. In the middle of everything, in the middle of Stormont, in the middle of this executive, which has done nothing about what I'm about to say, and it's this. We have the dearest electric in Europe. You cannot run an economy on very expensive electric, because all our competitors in Europe and throughout the world will have an edge on us because they have cheaper energy.
Well, Mike, that's perhaps a fair point from Michael there, in terms of something that's been an issue here for some time.
Yes, and I think the executive is guilty of not having a proper strategy for energy, not just in terms of generation and cost, but also in terms of the security of supply. If we go on the way we're going, Vinny, eventually the lights will start going out, because we are not generating enough of our own. We don't have enough interconnectors into other sources of energy, and that is a major issue, and indeed it's one the two first ministers identified as one of their five main areas of concern when they wrote to the Prime Minister post the Brexit referendum. So it is a point well made. If you are an international firm like Bombardier, with a base here, but also a headquarters elsewhere, of course you compare all your costs between your natural home and your foreign bases.
Michael, do you like living here?
Yes, I do.
Why? What is it about Northern Ireland you actually like?
Well, and the likes of the programme like yours and other sensible programmes, that we're searching for a way and we're trying to make things better. And if we can, retrieve the model that we've built for peace and reconciliation, we're also, we can be, and we mustn't forget, this is a big one, we can be a light and a beacon to other places in the world where there's terrible conflict. But in contrast to saying that, here's what I want to tell you, and many of your listeners will agree with me on this. Do you see, if I go away from holidays, like, say, 6 days to London, and that's still in the UK, by the way, or I go further afield, maybe, in the summertime to Sicily, and I'm away for a couple of weeks, I realize the tension that I've lived with all my life when I come back home. So I come back home, for example, and I switch on the TV. I've just had a brilliant holiday. And next thing I see, for example, one of the mayors of Belfast being attacked in a park, or it's the same old camellia as the 6 o'clock news, the 9 o'clock news. It sticks. Everybody's cortisol levels up sky high. And when you have cortisol firing through your blood and it's not being used properly, there's all our illnesses coming through big time. We're a stressed out society too often. But again, I don't want to sound too negative. I still feel we're fighting for the hope of the peace that we're looking for this last 20 years.
Nicola Mullen, we're a stressed out society.
I think there is a lot of merit in what Michael has said, and he's right. Healing our division, healing the hurt of the past is the big challenge that we've yet to overcome. But you know something? We need to have consistency in terms of words and actions, and all of us, regardless of whether we're in the executive or we're in opposition, we have a responsibility to show leadership, and we have a responsibility to move beyond division. Having slogans coming up the election time like "Vote Arlene to keep Martin out," and then as soon as the election's over, cozying up together, is unhelpful to say the least. And it just further adds stress to people's lives. It erodes their confidence in the institution and in all of us as political representatives. So we need to get real and we need to be consistent. If we're serious about healing the division and bringing people together, then we just don't talk the honeyed words. We follow it up by our actions.
One more call on this for now. John, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, John.
The report made by Spencer, Simon, Hamilton and Sinn Féin is totally ludicrous. If you look in areas across Belfast, which used to be, say, interface areas, they've got the highest rates of suicide, the highest rates of drug use. People who are disabled living in Victorian towns while waiting to be rehoused. Thousands of people across Belfast in housing stress. And this is supposed to be all a good news story, but forget about the working class and the problems that they have to deal with.
Would you recommend Northern Ireland and somewhere to live, say, for your friends in England or elsewhere,
well,
John?
I lived over in London and I couldn't wait to come back because people over here are more friendly. Your neighbour, you get on better with your neighbours.
Well, this report is saying just that, that we get on quite well, we rely on our community, but we don't go beyond, say, if it's your loyalist community, your nationalist community, we stay within. It actually says that we don't even, broad civic participation like volunteering is much lower. You know, instead we rely on our immediate community. So to an extent, you could interpret that as a positive because we do find there are some people in our lives that we can really rely on, we can trust. But yet we still find that border, that issue that comes up between us and members of the other community.
But what a sad indictment that is for Northern Ireland, especially for kids in the future.
Do you think, is it changing at all, John? Is it moving? Is it evolving in your understanding?
It is to a certain extent, but people are still being brought up with tribal conflict.